the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Time to talk to Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas about all things America, but let's start with Trump's deal with Iran. Marion McKeown, given all that has happened in recent months, is Operation Epic Fury in reality Operation Epic Failure on Trump's part?
Well, you know, it's certainly looking like that, depending on the metrics that you use to judge it by. It seems that if this is, let's assume, best case scenario, that these negotiations are successful and that there is a good outcome at the end of the 60 days, it just brings Trump back to where he was initially. Now, obviously, the Republicans will argue that they have decimated Iran's navy, they've hit their missile capacity. But if the other reports are true, that there will be 300 billion in it for Iran, a reconstruction fund, other incentives, release of sanctions. What was the point of it all? Because I don't think anybody seriously believes that the nuclear part of the deal, which we all know Trump will just kick down the road and kick down the road until he's out of power, because it seems that this is not going to reach any kind of a realistic settlement, and that by procrastinating he can, you know, not actually ever have to sign off on a deal, which would be immeasurably worse than the one that Obama agreed to back in 2015.
Okay, let's hear a little bit of his vice president, J.D. Vance, on CBS this morning when asked about reports that Iran could have access to a $300 billion reconstruction fund under the deal.
Well, Ed, that's the sort of thing they could have access to, funded by the Gulf Coast Coalition, so long as they honor their end of the obligation. I think that one of the things you're going to see, Ed, and people have to be skeptical of this, is that the hardliners in the Iranian system will overemphasize the benefits that Iran gets while underemphasizing all the things that they have to concede and all the things they have to provide in order to get these benefits. So we absolutely are open to the Gulf Coast countries investing in the reconstruction of Iran, but only if Iran ends their nuclear program, ends their enriched stockpile of material, and is really open to an inspections and enforcement regime that gives the American people confidence right. They're never going to have a nuclear weapon. So I think the dance you're going to see, Ed, which is going to be interesting, is the Iranian media, especially the hardline media, they're going to talk a lot about what they get without talking about what they give. It's important for all of us to correct that record.
Cal Thomas, if you just replaced the word Trump for Iran there, the hardliners in the Trump regime will claim all sorts of benefits and victory here and talk down the negative as well, won't they?
Well, the alternative, Matt, was more kicking of the can down the road, as Marion mentioned, but that has been done by Republican and Democrat presidents for some time. Trump is the first one to actually take action and stop them from developing a nuclear weapon. I don't think anybody, including Democrats in Congress, would be happy with Iran having a nuclear weapon. But here's the problem. Nobody really knows what's in this agreement. It's all called a memorandum of understanding, which is something like written in disappearing ink. We're not going to find out the details, we're told, until Friday after the signing in Geneva. I think that is crazy. First of all, I think Congress ought to be involved in that. In this, while it's not a treaty as required by the Constitution, it is a very important agreement. But here's the key. Contrary to the Ayatollah's concept of negotiation, as I write in my column for Thursday, the Western concept assumes good faith. It underscores reconciliation and peaceful coexistence with both sides making concessions. But the Ayatollah's concept of negotiation since the 7th century is an extension of warfare by other means. In other words, they lie, they don't give up anything that is not in their interests, and as far as this $300 billion fund goes, it's supposed to go from the Gulf states, as the vice president said, but is conditioned on Iran living up to certain things within the agreement we haven't seen yet.
I don't know if anyone can say that Donald Trump negotiates in good faith. And Cal, you know, President Barack Obama had a deal with Iran which resulted in the reduction of their nuclear capabilities by about 98%. And this was the international agencies oversaw that and verified that. Trump tore up the deal. The Iranians decided to rebuild their nuclear capacity. And what is it now? Has it actually been destroyed by the attacks by the Americans? Or is it still there that needs to be got at? Which one is it?
You know, Matt, this reminds me of the events leading up to World War II, when there was incredible denial within the British Parliament about Hitler violating the armistice or the agreement from the First World War and building up in secret his military capabilities. President Obama sent cash directly. Now, he said it was Iran's money anyway that had been frozen. The difference here is, supposedly, and it's you have to wait until the deal is done, that this is conditional upon Iran meeting certain guidelines or certain goals. And we'll see. But again, we're talking about something that we haven't even seen yet. It's all speculation. Nobody except the president and vice president apparently have seen it. So let's wait at least until Friday to see what we get before we draw our conclusions, although there's no record of Iran ever living up to any agreement it has made with Western infidels.
Okay, there's very little evidence of Trump sticking by his agreements either. Marion McKeown, can I go back to you on this? Because he's trying to claim this is some sort of victory because the Strait of Hormuz is now open. The Strait of Hormuz was open before he started bombing Iran.
Well, exactly. And now apparently Iran is saying that if we can, and I agree with Cal, we can only go on what we're seeing at the moment. And this is what is being released and authorized by the White House for us to see. So I think it's reasonable for us to make any assessments on that pending seeing more details on Friday, if indeed they do come on Friday and something doesn't happen in the meantime. But yes, so we have a situation now where, and it's even referred to, I think, by J.D. Vance, I saw it or elsewhere, that at the moment, you know, they're saying, yes, we will reopen the strait, and that for the 60 days, they won't charge a toll or a fee. But there's no guarantee after that that Iran and indeed Oman between them won't decide to put some kind of a toll on this. So basically, Trump went to war, spent all this money, is now going to try and scare up $300 billion from Gulf states and give all this to Iran. And let's not forget about the lives lost, the thousands of lives in Lebanon, the 1.2 million people displaced, the school children who were killed on the first day of this war in Iran, the American soldiers who were killed, and all the other people whose homes were destroyed and were displaced in Iran. We don't even know the death toll there. And for what? Because we're back to this now where there may, you know, Iran now realizes, and this is the worst thing, I think, for America, that America's standing. If let's just say we were able to return to zero and that nobody had been killed or injured, etc. But America's standing in the Middle East has now been really weakened because they've seen that Iran stood up to America and that it prevailed. And I would imagine that a lot of these Gulf states may be thinking, would they not be better off to just pacify Iran, particularly if Trump is now going to charge them $300 billion for the price of going into a war of his choice with Iran and they're left to pick up the tab. It just seems like a lousy deal all round.
Could it be as well, Cal, that Donald Trump simply didn't have the guts to go and finish the job that he started?
Well, that's the argument by a lot of so-called hardliners in the United States. And it's like having an operation. If you don't get it all, it's likely to come back. Marion, or maybe you, mentioned the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. They went in before, and a lot of this stuff, meaning nuclear material, was hidden from them. They lied, the regime did, to IAEA. And it was the same in North Korea, by the way, which you know so well. So I don't think we can trust anything that the Iranians say unless we have verifiable proof. The fact that they're going to allow, supposedly, IAEA inspectors in again, they've got to have a different way of approaching it than they did before, or else we are going to be steamrolled again. But the alternative to all of this, and Marion didn't mention, the thousands upon thousands of Iranians who tried to rise up and overthrow the government that they hate and were mowed down by the Iranian military, the guard, and thousands of them. And they want a different kind of leadership. They want a different kind of country, but they're not being allowed to have it because of the crazed religious fanatics that run it.
Well, Trump gave up on that, looking to help them pretty quickly. And the other thing I just meant you say about the IAEA not being able to get the correct information. I remember America lying about weapons of mass destruction being in Iraq as a justification for the war in 2003. There were no weapons of mass destruction.
You're right. You're right. That was a terrible thing. And, you know, we have dictators in the world who keep the lid on. We may not like them. We may not like their policies, but they keep things from getting worse. You think of Tito in Yugoslavia, and Saddam Hussein was a nasty person. He would even shoot people at his dinner table who crossed him the wrong way, but he kept the lid on. And I'm not saying that we need somebody like him back, and Iraq is not in a great place at the moment. But, again, as George McGovern said about Vietnam, we can't be the policemen of the world. We need to have a conversation about what is in America's long-term interests, and we need to have it between Republicans and Democrats and keep the political angle out of it as much as possible.
This listener points out to me about North Korea as well, that Trump effectively has allowed North Korea to have its nuclear weapons. Trump went and met and did a big stage summit with Kim Jong-un. And where did that get us? Nowhere.
Well, that's true. And I've said before in the program that one of Trump's great flaws is that his foreign policy is by personality. And you can't deal with personality when you're dealing with dictators like Kim Jong-un or his great friend Vladimir Putin, who he appears to love more than Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine. So that is a bad way to approach foreign policy, thinking that your personality and saying nice things about dictators is going to force them to come to your point of view. It doesn't. It hasn't. It won't.
Of course, Marianne, one relationship that seems to be foundering at the moment is that with Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, who many people believe bounced Trump into the attack on Iran, feeding him all this guff about nuclear weapons and how easy it would be to take out the Iranians. But it would seem now that that relationship is sundered completely. Reading Ed Luce in the Financial Times this afternoon about this, what do you reckon? Is this the end of Netanyahu? Could this be the one good thing that may have come out of all of this?
Well, it's certainly looking like he has been immeasurably weakened at home and humiliated abroad, because Netanyahu, of course, is facing elections. He's delayed them for as long as he can, and they're due in October, and it seems like he can't bounce them any further than that. And at the moment, it looks particularly now with this, if he is forced to stop, and his, you know, people say that American foreign policy has been dictated by Netanyahu, but in this instance, Israeli foreign policy is very much being dictated by Donald Trump, and the Israeli people are not at all happy about being a vassal state for America. Now, whatever we think of Netanyahu as a prime minister, he is their prime minister, and they really don't like him being told what to do when it comes to dealing with Hezbollah or Hamas or any of the other actors in the region. And the thing about this as well is that Trump seems to be almost making a point of leaking all this to various new journalists, in particular one journalist in Axios. And we saw that he made comments saying most recently at the G7 summit that there would be no Israel without him. Without the United States, there would be no Israel. No other president was willing to do what I did. Israel would have been blown up a long time ago had I not gotten involved. And he said last week, very derogatory remarks that he made to Netanyahu were leaked to Axios. And he seemed to have no problem with that, and with showing the world and showing people that he has Netanyahu under his thumb, whether he does or not, and whether or not Netanyahu won't try to deliberately scuttle this agreement, remains to be seen. I would be very surprised if Israel doesn't continue. He says it's his right to continue to take on Hezbollah and stay in Lebanon if he so chooses. The whole thing really is a bit of a mess. And I think that one thing I just want to pick up on about the IAEA, when Obama did that deal, the JCPOA, back in 2015, it was a 150-page deal. It took 20 months to negotiate. There were 7 or 8 different countries involved. But the net result was that 11 tons of enriched uranium were taken out of Iran on a boat. It was a Russian boat, but they were taken out. It was left with no enriched nuclear. And it only started to enrich again when Trump tore up the deal in 2018. The inspectors were in there. They were... It was being effective. There's no proof that they lied to any inspectors. And so I do think that that is something that's worth noting. That deal was okay. Working. Trump decided to tear it up and we are where we are now.
Actually, let's just hear that bit from Trump at the G7 summit saying that Israel wouldn't exist without him.
Without the United States, there would be no Israel. Without me, there would be no Israel, because no other president was willing to do what I did. I've had a great relationship with Bibi, but now Bibi has to be more responsible with respect to Lebanon. Lebanon used to be a great country. It was a country where you had professors, doctors, lawyers. The great intellect was in Lebanon. Now it's terrible. I would say of all countries, they've been treated the worst. And they can't defend themselves. And they have Hezbollah, which is a problem for them. So, no, I'm not happy with the way Israel has handled themselves with Lebanon and with Hezbollah. They should have been able to do the job faster. It just goes on forever. And when that happens, it throws a negative light on the big deal, and that's the deal with Iran. So, when you ask me about Bibi, an unbelievable relationship. But Israel would have been blown up a long time ago had I not gotten involved.
What do you think of that, Cal? Israel would have been blown up a long time ago. It wouldn't exist if it weren't for a big Donald Trump.
Well, he has a point beyond himself. The United States has been helping Israel since its reconstitution of the land in 1948. Harry Truman, then president of the United States, was the first world leader to recognize modern Israel. And I think of Richard Nixon helping Golda Meir. Israel has fought 5 wars. It's managed to win them all, mostly on its own, but also with American help. And we have to understand, going back to what I said earlier, and you'll see in my column on Thursday if people read it, there's a different negotiating metric between Hezbollah, Iran, Hamas, and all these other people whose goal has been and continues to be the complete eradication of the Israeli state and the killing of as many Jews as possible, and then coming after the great Satan, the United States. That's what they say. There's no indication that they have changed their minds on any of this. And I think that if we believe that their minds can be changed, we are deluding ourselves.
Let's move away from all of that. Carl, I would just want to ask you, what did you think of the White House UFC event on Sunday, celebrating Trump's 80th birthday, the cage fighting on the lawn of the White House? How proud should America be of that?
I thought it was a perversion, Matt. I thought it was disgusting. As you say, the White House is... Well, you didn't say it, but I will, almost hallowed ground in this country. And to stage a UFC fight was pathetic. But I was also interested in this story that there was a plot to attack the event. 12 suspects, according to the New York Post just reported, across the U.S. who adhered to an accelerationist ideology and hoped to bring down American capitalism, were arrested going across at least 4 states, California, Ohio, Missouri, and Nebraska. I think you're going to see more of these, not only during the Trump administration especially, but in administrations that follow, because America's enemies want to destroy this country, and some within want to impose socialism, as there's an election in Washington, D.C. today. A socialist candidate looks like she's going to win. You have Mamdani in New York, and other, especially young people, are flirting with socialism, which they've never had to live under. And so I think this is a continuing problem. But I was totally against that UFC thing on the White House lawn.
And Cal, what do you think of Trump smiling when a UFC fighter started disparaging Michelle Obama?
Disgusting, revolting. And even the head of the UFC apologized to the public for this. But we haven't heard Trump's apology yet. He was smirking when it was said.
You won't hear an apology, Cal. This is the man who put out the social media post of the Obamas as apes, and he wouldn't apologize for that.
Well, you're right. And, of course, that he was not born in the United States and all these other lies. I think the character issue on Trump was settled a long time ago, even before he became president. But, you know, I've talked about this before. I'm against personal attacks. He's attacked Nancy Pelosi, the former speaker. He's attacked all kinds of people. He even called his current Secretary of State Little Marco. He's all these other things. So unnecessary, so degrading to himself, not to others, and so disgusting. But he's not going to change. I mean, he is what he is. And barring some massive conversion, which is going to take a power higher than any of us have, I think he's going to stay the same for the next 2 years plus.
Yeah, I see, Marion, that his deputy, the man who's just a cheeseburger away from the presidency, J.D. Vance, is out there promoting a new book. His follow-up to Hillbilly Elegy is Communion, Finding My Way Back to Faith. Now, I don't know when he had the time to write this book, but I heard him say in one interview how Trump was a man of great faith. He just doesn't like displaying it publicly. Yeah. But he also said, Marion, that he sort of apologized, didn't he? Well, he admitted he was foolish to mock Democrats, including Kamala Harris, as childless cat ladies. Did he? He said it was one of the dumbest things he'd ever said. But did he really have the grace to apologize for it?
Well, not really. And, you know, I think the thing with J.D. Vance is that he is the most calculating and cynical of politicians. And I think that this is all clearly part of a ready up for him, a lay up to his 2028 campaign. And he obviously wants to get as many Republican childless cat ladies on side as he possibly can. To me, it rang very, very hollow. You know, I'm amazed at all these cabinet members. You know, Robert F. Kennedy is going around just, you know, on one doing push-ups permanently, it seems. Sean Duffy, the transport secretary, managed to go off and film a 7-month road trip as the airlines were imploding. And now we have J.D. Vance managing to find enough time to write a book. I mean, it seems that they all regard their cabinet positions as second jobs. But I do think that J.D. Vance, as I say, this is all part of a very calculated process to get ready to announce his candidacy, I would say, in the not-too-distant future. It's pretty transparent. You know, his first book was a big seller, Hillbilly Elegy. It was even made into a movie by Ron Howard, which, of course, Ron Howard said he bitterly regrets. But let's see how well this book sells. I suspect it will be a bestseller nonetheless.
Marion McKeown, Cal Thomas, thank you.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.